Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Hello and welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast. I'm Philip Gilfus, and I'm joined here by my fellow travelers, comrades Daniel Prue and Darren Moser. Gentlemen, how are things going in your Trek journey?
Greetings, comrade. Speaker of Trek. No, I don't know. No, Trek is good right now. We just passed the 20th anniversary of First Contact coming out. So it is time to watch that wonderful movie yet again. And I am really hoping for Star Trek Beyond on my Christmas list.
Darren, blow up the damn mic! Sorry. Oh, you know what? I mentioned this to you guys in private, I think. And I don't think I mentioned it on the show, but I was watching Luke Cage just recently. And I was watching it and, you know, enjoying it. It's good. And I'm like, man, this woman character, she's very, very familiar to me. I know I've seen her from somewhere before. And I was going through, it's probably two or three episodes in after her character is introduced. And I'm like, I know her because she started yelling just like Lily did in First Contact. And I'm like, that's Lily from First Contact. Oh, my goodness. So I just thought of that just now. But it was pretty interesting to see her with hair, and like you just mentioned, 20 years later. So it was neat.
Cool. Yes. Star Trek lives. Well, speaking of surprises and things far away, we did say those things. We'll put it in post. But today's topic is about long journeys in Star Trek, of basically when our favorite ships and crews sort of got put, you know, usually involuntarily, far, far away from home, and what they did or what they didn't do when faced with a journey back, whether it was, you know, being flung across the galaxy by Q or the caretaker or, you know, bad plotting, you know, whatever, what we did. And so this is just going to be random. I know I usually go in chronological order in universe, but you know what? We're just going to go random today because we're wild and crazy, and it's in keeping with the theory of being thrown far, far away. And I'm going to start with the obvious one from Next Generation, and that's where no one has gone before. I don't know if we ever really need to remind anyone of what happened, but in case we need to, this is where... I forgot his name. Random civilian engineer with only one name who thinks he's in control. I'll let y'all look it up. You know, it's actually the Traveler, his assistant, who ends up flinging the Enterprise.
Kaczynski,
there we go. Very good. you know, and I don't know. First they go across the galaxy, then they go into just like who knows where, other dimensions or universes or galaxies, and sort of then they have to go back. And they use sort of the Neverland philosophy of thinking good thoughts, and a little bit of a Traveler fairy dust gets them home by the end of the show. But you know, season one, which, you know, I'm always a proponent of season one TNG, you know, because I know it gets a bad rap, but that's a good show or a good episode where no one has gone before. Some interesting effects, especially for 1987, of the different places that the Enterprise D finds itself in. You know, first it's just a long distance and it's sort of like the bubble verse, and then just even the warp effect is pretty cool, looking, especially for 1987. So what did y'all think of how Captain Picard and his new crew find themselves?
The bubble verse is somewhere you'd want to go and just pop all the bubbles, I would think. But
it's very a good relaxing.
Place. Yes, it is. It's a good place to start because it's got to be the furthest, right, in Star Trek canon that we ever go. I mean, we jump, like, Data's like, oh, we left the Milky Way, and now we're in 17, we went through 8 other galaxies, and we're like sub-zillion, and then we're in the Thought universe, and yeah, like, it's by far the furthest they go. So, of course, we get right back real quick, so it's not too bad, but yeah, it's quite the journey for the you know, 2 hours that they're there.
Right. I mean, the I'm going to mess up the name. The Bergeron particles. What are they called? The buildup of those. I mean, they're going to have to go to that star base like 5 times in a year to get their baryon sweep.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And what about you, Darren? How about the galaxy far, far away in season one?
Well, you may not know this, but I'm actually a dancer. So if you were walking by my room at a moment when I was thinking about dancing, but I wasn't. I'm sorry, I wasn't thinking about podcasting as I should have been. I was thinking about dancing, and I just became a dancer. But that's what happens when you're 2.7 million light years from the Milky Way galaxy.
All right. It is a very I mean, metaphysical episode, the traveler, the dangerous ideas of Wesley that thought and energy might be the same thing. Don't speak about this to anyone.
Was it the beginning of the Traveler trilogy, right?
It is. It is.
there's also an episode of South Park called Imagination Land, which deals with the very same topics, but maybe in a little bit different of a way. Yes, no, this is the Power of Imagination episode, which is yes, it's very metaphysical. It's a little almost. I don't want to say it's too highbrow. That's not the right word for Star Trek, but it's too. It's certainly too much that early on, I feel. Because it's the effects are cool and stuff, but it's like if you start your adventure going further than anybody else has ever gone before, that kind of sets a bad precedent, I think.
You like to set the bar high and just,
For sure. Well, I mean, the Traveler is pretty tall, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know. I don't think they ever have time to really sort of have the thought of like, oh gosh, we're stuck here, because I think they keep on going further and further. And then, of how to get back, it's by that time, 40 minutes has passed and we got to get home in the next 10.
Well, again, so. This is where, you look back at how television is made more nowadays. And I think this concept could have really been explored if it was like a 2 or 3 episode arc. And so where you're like, oh, I don't know when they're going to get back. They actually spend time, maybe not as far away as the place where thought becomes, reality, but, make it be more concerning. I mean, when it seems like our characters come back to normal space within a day or two, it really kind of takes away the immediacy of, this danger of not getting
saying,
home.
Darren, like, would you say we could probably stretch this out into a season or maybe 7, maybe a whole show even, we could just dedicate to this entire premise?
I could see where you could bring, come up with that, but that's not exactly
we could
what
call
I
it
was
like,
thinking, but...
Like Lost in Voyager.
Traveler.
Or Traveling Voyager or
the
something
expedition.
Like that.
Yes. Well, no, but I wasn't saying a season or 3. I was thinking like 2 or 3 episodes, but yes.
It'd be like Where No Man Has Gone Before and Where No Man Has Gone After. Where No One, excuse me. You brought it up, Darren. So talk about Voyager in 10 minutes.
I bring it up. Daniel brought it up.
Yeah, but he hates Voyager, so I'm making.
I don't hate Voyager. Well, don't paint me with a broad brush here.
But then, obviously we have Voyager where they're stuck 75,000 light years from home. Going to take 75 years to get home, and it ends up taking 7, which is pretty good turnaround.
A lot of sevens.
Yeah, a lot of sevens in there. 47 sevens.
There's even a character named 7. So I mean.
But I think it's also interesting. I mean, obviously, there's the pocket episodes, Year of Hell, where we see a lot of time pass. Not that, I guess, but with that, I'm referring to, I would have liked to have seen Voyager gone more in that direction. Not so quickly to deteriorate, but have much more change and consequences to the ship as they go, because it was such a unique and great premise and they just didn't quite take that gamble, which is all right. I love the series we got, but I think making it a little more, I guess you'd call it Battlestar Galacta-esque, with actual consequences, actual wear and tear on the ship, you know, add new crew, lose crew, which we did get some of these things, but at the end of the day, you needed to be able to use that stock shot of the Voyager, you know, so that you save money. So I get it, but you know, but it was a great, I always was admired Voyager. I always admired Voyager for coming up with an original concept of the TNG concept, because really, I mean, it's how do you, you know, how do you, you have to differentiate this third, you know, this fourth Star Trek series. How does this not just be Alien of the Week, TNG, you know, you, but you wrap it in this amazing premise with the, with a great pilot and, you know, really strong characters, and it works.
Tom's pretty good. Yeah, well, I mean, because I think the when I think about this topic of sort of, you know, journeys home, it's, you know, to me, it's the consequence of how do you deal with the fact. And, you know, it's hard to do it in one episode. You know, the consequences of like, oh, man, we have to get back. And then they get back like 5 minutes later. But, you know, obviously Voyager is sort of the best example. You know, how do they deal with that? We may not get home, or that it may take a long, long time to get home. And I know, you know, I've heard other people talk about, you know, they wish that there was more of a generational ship feeling, that maybe there were more children and more people, you know, marrying and having kids, you know, throughout that 7 years, just kind of show that sort of evolution a bit. But sort of the consequences of, you know, we might not get back. And there were a lot of times, not a lot of times, but, you know, several times when they're like, hey, maybe we should just stop at this planet and just, you know, live our lives here and forget about the long journey, you know. And a lot of times I feel like Chakotay was often the one, whether it was in Resolutions or even I think maybe Scorpion, maybe, where at different times where Chakotay would be like, you know, the path ahead is too dangerous, you know, Catherine, and maybe we should just count ourselves lucky and just stop here. But then, you know, Janeway was always like, no, I'm getting this crew home. I'm getting this crew home. I'm getting this crew home. And then, you know, sometimes being the only ship, of course, you know, there is no Starfleet. There's just Voyager, at least not until Pathfinder comes along.
Well, and also you have the entire Voyager crew misses the Dominion War. I mean, they leave before it starts, and, you know, they return, you know, after it's ended. So, I mean, yes, they did have contact with the Federation, but it's almost like, wait, what happened? Well, we were gone? Like the Great now, Federation War?
Yeah, well, and in some ways, and I'm going to say this and I might be wrong, but like with Voyager, there's sort of this snapshot of Starfleet. Like, in other words, you know, when they leave, or, you know, when the caretaker takes both ships, you know, on the Maquis and Starfleet and Voyager, but like that's a snapshot of the Federation at that time in Starfleet. Mm. And so, but they maintain that, you know, it's sort of like a people who live, you know, far away, never get any news, and they're just going to keep that the way in that time. So, like, you know, I mean, it's just a little thing, but like, for instance, they always keep the same uniform.
Right.
Like, even after they contact Starfleet, which I was thinking about this yesterday. I mean, I've thought about it often, but, like, shouldn't they have changed? Like, what would you have thought if they had changed to uniforms once they contacted Starfleet?
And
when, like,
well, I know the real universe answer of we don't want to spend the money to re-costume every person.
How much could it possibly have been? Like, you're just using Deep Space Nine and they're not using them anymore because they're off the air.
Well, we already tried shoving people into DS9 uniforms in Generations when it didn't fully tailor, and it didn't that didn't work too well, Philip. But yeah, I don't know. I think, again, that would have, if they had been more of a let's progress and show change, then I think they would have done that. But I mean think how awesome it would have been then when you had like the Shattered episode where they go back and forth, you know, like the fact that even in that time they're still wearing, you know, the classic, you know, shoulders. I think it would have been interesting. And you could have also had a, you know, this is the big, I mean, just as, you know, Neelix makeup kind of changed a bit, you know, Janeway's hair changed, you know, there has been change in their wardrobe, but I mean, even Next Gen had a change between seasons 2 and 3 in everybody's costumes. So I think they could have gotten away with it, but I understand why they didn't.
You know, and thinking about this in this context, it makes me realize that the Voyager must be the most unlucky crew and ship in the fleet, because all of the other crews go through this very same dilemma, and everybody makes it back within the end of the episode, except for Voyager.
Guys, it's totally going to be okay. Just another couple hours, and I'm sure we're going to... Oh, wait, no.
And not only do they not make it back, they have, like, multiple close calls of getting back. Like, oh, there's this neat technology here that might work, or there's this advanced alien race that might be able to kick us this way, and, like, it never works out for them, whereas, like, every other crew gets back pretty quickly, so...
Now, here's a question, Daniel and Philip, that I have for you. I mean, there are moments, like you said, where they get kicked forward and, oh, they shave 10,000 years off or light years off this time, or, oh, another, you know, 3,000 light years closer to home. Would it have felt, I mean, so at least you felt like they were progressing, but what if they had done it this way where... It's like literally they're only 7,000 light years closer. Like they don't get thrown at all. And not till literally the end of season 7. So they've just moved, you know, normal pace for 7 years and then they get flung the entire rest of the way home. Would that have changed the payoff you feel of Voyager?
Does it matter that they didn't do that? I mean, I feel like it wouldn't have changed anything because like you're mentioning, like when Cass gets, when she does her little boost, right?
Right.
And then there's a couple of other times that kind of happens. It doesn't fundamentally change the show, other than like not having the Kazon on after that. It feels to me like it would not have made a difference. To me, it wouldn't have made a difference at all because it wouldn't have mattered if they were 40 years away from Earth or 60 years away from Earth at that point. The fact that they jumped the rest of the way is really what matters.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it would have been cool, though I can see why not, they didn't do it. But, like, they had, like, a little, like, map of, like, you know, this is where Voyager is.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Because I think it is artificial, even if you have, like, I don't know, I don't have it, but, like, Larry Nemechek's cartography, what is it called? Stellar cartography book?
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, the map of the you know, galaxy or Milky Way or whatever.
Because I've seen that map where it's like, here's Borg space, here's, you know, this is, yeah. And it has a little Voyager. It's like, here's this, it's like a little squiggly stretch and then a straight line to the next point, like when they got flung forward. But
yeah, just have like your little Indiana Jones Voyager.
You know, that's actually a really cool idea. And that would have been a really cool concept for one of the like sets. I don't know if they would have put it in the mess hall or where. But like,
oh, like where they are, like,
yeah, you know. Just like on one of the big displays, like actually, because you, I mean, as somebody on that ship, you know, that would be very like moralizing to you. Like, look how far we've come.
Like Janeway, like it'd be like the Laura Roslin, like she'd have the whiteboard and exactly. She's like, how many miles to Earth instead of like how many people, and she'd like wipe it down and be like, you know, decrease, except like, you know, instead of like Battlestar Galactica, it was always bad when it went down, but on Voyager it'd be good when it goes down because it'd be like,
but like I was thinking like the display on the back of the bridge of the Voyager. I mean, obviously you couldn't do it there because that's important and is displaying important information that all the enemies can see, but that doesn't matter. I'm thinking somewhere like more casual, where like it would be very on display for people, because so they could go and look at it and like feel good about themselves. Hey, look, we're getting this much closer. That would seem to be like a big morale boost on the Voyager.
Or it'd be like so many days until Christmas, like only 60 years until Earth, guys. And, like 59, you know, after Cass, like 40. You know. Is that, though, I guess that would destroy the episodic,
I think that would have been good.
Voyager. Yeah.
Well, I mean, so, the ship wasn't that big. They couldn't have a giant stellar cartography.
Yes. Well, I mean, destroy it. Yeah. I don't know if it would destroy it so much as just be in the background, but it'd be cool.
Well, obviously, we could talk about Voyager forever because it could be its own podcast. But let me jump ahead to another series. And if you all have you know, an idea, throw one out. But this is one where I'm going to kind of bend the rules. But it's an episode that always sticks in my head for some reason because... Unlike Year of Hell, or, you know, not counting Year of Hell, I think it's the longest episode of Star Trek, and I feel free to challenge me, but like I said, other than Year of Hell, because that's a year in two episodes, but it's from the original series, and it's the Paradise Syndrome, and for those who may not remember, this is sort of the Kirk falls, or, you know, gets trapped on the Native American planet, and then loses memory. But meanwhile, and I'm kind of hopefully going to get this right because it's doing off the top of my head, there's an asteroid that's going to like basically crash into the planet. And so the Enterprise, you know, goes, has, you know, abandons Kirk because they have to go stop the asteroid. And they try to do like a little deflection thing and ends up like burning out the power and they lose warp drive. So they have to go to Impulse with the asteroid. And I looked it up on Memory Alpha. I think it was like 58 days. And so this episode lasts like 58 or 59 or 60 days. This whole, this, you know, in one episode, because you just have the Enterprise crawling at Impulse, literally. And I just think it's sort of that interesting. Obviously, they're not far from home. Like just part of the, but just that once you take warp drive away, you know, suddenly anything suddenly takes forever.
Right. And I don't Impulse know if the math is like actually not even near good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think like, that those are interesting times where that's the fear. It's like, you know, when warp drive must be really robust if, you know, we really need to make sure we don't lose it because otherwise, guys, we are in big trouble.
Or trouble. Because, like, the other time, I'm trying to think of a time of when they lose warp power is in Deep Space Nine. In the episode...
Oh, yes.
A Time to Stand. Yeah, I had to look that up, people. A Time to Stand. It's a very small part of the episode, even though for some reason in my mind it was a bigger part, because obviously they cheated the next episode. But it was sort of a long story short. This is when the DS9 crew have a steal the... Well, the steal bar, whatever. The Jem'Hadar ship, I think from the ship. The episode of the ship, I believe, is the same one. But anyway, they have the Jem'Hadar ship that they're taking, and... I actually forget the larger plot. I think they're trying to blow up some sort of Dominion thing. But anyway, they end up getting damaged and lose their warp drive. And they're on Impulse. And I think I got the quote here from Bashir. It's like, it'll take 17 years, 2 months, and 3 days to get to the closest Federation starship. And like that would have been cool, except in the next episode, they get rescued by Klingons. And it's about Alexander. So
well, there's two things about that. The first is... You're kind of fudging it a little bit, I'm probably going to get it wrong too. But when they're figuring out how long it's going to take back without warp drive, I'm pretty sure somebody says, "Oh, it'll take something like 17 years," and then they ask Bashir, and he does the data thing where he goes, "Oh, 17 years, 2 months," five, you know, because he's at this point he's been outed as a genetically enhanced individual,
which I always liked.
I thought that was a good touch. And it is actually a pretty down part of the episode. I mean, of course, like you say, Philip, the next episode, they figure it out and they get out of there. So it's like kind of artificial drama. But the thing is, like, especially with Deep Space Nine and Enterprise, I guess, the more you move away from episodic into serialized, you can't do those kinds of stories where it takes a long time. Obviously, Voyager, its entire premise was built on this, so you can do that. But... TOS and TNG probably have the biggest kind of leeway with these sort of things, where they can take episodes that will take a month or two or be very ambiguous as to how long this has been. And then Deep Space Nine, you can't, especially towards the end of Deep Space Nine, when you're literally dealing with, you know, things happening back to back, like day, maybe a week, month tops. So you kind of can't do, and even Enterprise did the same kind of thing where you can't really fool around with time that much. So it's a little bit harder for them to get lost. And,
well, they fooled around with time.
Well, separate than time travel, but
yeah, and because it would have been nice. Because I always feel like that was a wasted opportunity. Deep Space Nine again, of course. When I'm talking about Deep Space Nine, everyone can ignore it because I'm not the best source for that. But like that was something, at least an episode of like crawling at Impulse, and I don't know what a story you can make from that, but something, because you know it was sort of like. I was looking this up in Memory Alpha. I'm like, oh, well, surely they dealt with it in an episode, but it's like, nope, the next episode, Sons and Daughters, and it's just like, they just, like, casual mention, like, we're all in Deep Space Nine, the Klingons rescued us. I'm like, well, then what the, it wasn't even worth doing. Why'd you even do that? It's like blowing up the Defiant and getting a new one. You know, why'd you even do it? But anyway, that's, don't, I'm not going to get my DS9 soapbox.
It's
but,
almost like coming back after destroying the Enterprise and, oh, look, there's literally another ship.
Right, you guys are trying to get me upset at this
just
point.
Like the ship we had. So glad they were building it.
Well, but when I was thinking about this, and of course, I'm going to say the reason they didn't do it, because obviously Voyager was on the air. But like, there was never a real... and y'all can feel free to jump in because y'all are more DS9 experts than me. There's never really like a really arc in the Gamma Quadrant. I know the Dominion's in the Gamma Quadrant, but they were in the Alpha Quadrant. Like, there's never like a Gamma Quadrant arc. Like, I almost feel like, I mean, other than the Dominion being from the Gamma Quadrant, I got that, you know, enemy from somewhere else. But they, like, them in the Gamma Quadrant, there's never really big arc.
Like, the fact we never set up a little base or something.
Yeah, I mean, like, I know they would have random, you know, adventures, like, on a random Gamma Quadrant planet, but, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it was set up to, it's interesting, it's really interesting that the way it was set up, I felt like the Dominion was a bit of an afterthought, because it wasn't working that, in the beginning, it wasn't quite working out that we would just have people show up through the wormhole and just appear here. It just didn't fit. So then they started to do, well, maybe we'll explore the Gamma Quadrant, and they'd play a little bit with it, but then eventually the Dominion came in, which is the best thing that they did, I guess. But yeah, it wasn't never like the Gamma Quadrant show. It was never like, let's explore the Gamma Quadrant and see what's going on. It was more like, how does the Gamma Quadrant interacting with the Alpha Quadrant affect Deep Space Nine? So I guess it's just not the story they wanted to tell, which is totally fine with me. But yeah, I agree with you. It's just not the direction they went.
Because I think about when, you know, thinking to myself, like, what if the wormhole didn't work? And like, well, that was several episodes that happened. But it was always sort of the consequence of the other side. Like, it was either, oh, the wormhole's closed for good, and oh, you know, no more access to the prophets for Bajor, or oh, you know, now the Alpha Quadrant shut out from the Gamma Quadrant. Like, I would have loved for like some of our crew to be stuck on the other side, you know, when the wormhole.
Yeah, make
got
it
in.
Like
so stuck
the episode where they. Yeah, I think like when they set up the mines, like, add the twist that some of our people are stuck on the other side, and they have to now, they're behind enemy lines, and they got to figure it out. Not just getting home, because their goal is not to get home. Their goal is to survive until something else happens.
Yeah, there was, I agree with you wholeheartedly, Darren, and I've never really even thought about this, that there should have been something stable on the other side of the wormhole. There was new Bajor, but they got like destroyed 6 months after that was installed. So it was like, what's the point there? You know, I guess the wormhole is supposed to be, especially towards the later half, is more of like a threat and like a fear of kind of what's coming through.
Then I just imagine in season 6 and 7, it's sort of like, you know, LA traffic in the Gamma Quadrant, just like all these Dominion ships just backed up at the wormhole. Like, any minute, guys, we're going to invade this sucker. We're just waiting. I mean, I know the first fleet disappeared, but I mean, like, it's not like we're just never going to try it again, are we? We're never going to try it again. Okay. All right. Well, I mean, that's a technique. Okay. But I don't know. Like, I can't even think of anything like remotely. Like, I mean, Dominion, I got it. But like, what was the other, like, what's the other cool race of, like, there were like some random ones like the Ferengi dealt with,
the Tac-Tac, obviously. Get your, no. wait, that was Voyager.
No, that was Voyager, because it was like how they, that's how they learned about the Dominion. But anyway,
there was that James Cromwell race.
Oh yeah, with the connection on his,
which
on
one
his
Daniel
mouth.
He played several characters.
This is,
I can't
true
remember the name of it, but it was in the episode where they were stuck on the Defiant
with the torpedo.
Torpedo, yeah. And, no, you know, it's, well, I mean, I guess the idea is that everybody in the Gamma Quadrant has been subjugated by the Dominion. But you would think that there would be some people that weren't, and that, I mean, it's a big place, and I don't know, we actually, you know, as important as the Gamma Quadrant is to Deep Space Nine, we don't really learn a lot about it. Not in the way that we learn about the Delta Quadrant. Voyager, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, another one that I was thinking of, and again, I think TNG does it the most, and maybe I'm wrong, other than Voyager, the entire series. But like Q-Who, you know, obviously, I guess, but just because it's obvious doesn't mean we don't mention it. You know, Enterprise gets flung to the Delta Quadrant, but don't worry, guys, it'll be all right. But of course, you know, this being what, season two, because they were still wearing the old uniforms, right? Season two, I'll say it until I'm corrected. You know, their first response is like, oh my gosh, we're far from home. Should we worry about getting back? No, let's explore. you know, because we're Starfleet. So
you're talking about TNG?
Yeah.
That line was said by Data in Where No One Has Gone Before.
When he suggests that they explore the area, they may not get the chance again.
Yep. And Picard's like, no.
No. No. But in Q-Who, they do.
We are pulling a Janeway.
Yeah. But in Q-Who, they're like, oh, we're in the Delta Quadrant. Well, they don't say Delta Quadrant, but we're in System J25. Did I get that right? I think I was close. But anyway, it doesn't matter. And hey, let's explore. Let's see what's in this part of space. And it's only like, hey, there's a cube. Let's go look at that thing.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I was thinking totally wrong. Yeah, you're talking about the, yes, I'm sorry. It's a Q episode, so I can't tell the difference. yeah, you're right. You're right, they do. It is the Delta Quadrant at that point, huh?
Yep.
And then, of course, they get back in that same episode. But, to be fair, that episode, the entire concept of that episode is to teach humanity a lesson. Punch them in the nose, as it were, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you can't handle a bloody nose, stay out of the kitchen or something. I don't know.
I believe that is the 21st century expression. If you don't want a bloody nose, get out of the kitchen. That's when Neelix was in a mood. That's what they would say on Voyager.
And this is the only one of two times that the crew of the Enterprise, or some of them at least, make it to the Delta Quadrant.
That's true. That's right. That's right. And the price being the other one, of course. Well, of course.
Oh, come on, Voyager.
In that one, you know, when faced with the peril that they may be stuck in the Delta Quadrant, Data reassures Geordi, you'll at least have me.
I will not always have you, because you'll eventually die, but...
Well, to be fair, if you're going to be stuck across the galaxy with a being, Data's probably a good choice.
I mean, he'll know all the songs to sing. If you want to hear some Gilbert and Sullivan, you know, he has it in there.
I haven't had time to meet all the crew.
And then one thing we were talking about before we were recording, you know, a lot of this is being flung across. Well, so sometimes they voluntarily were far from home. And I think Darren was talking about Enterprise. That's sort of the whole series. You know, if you think about Voyager's whole series is getting home, Enterprise is going away from home. You know, and exploring, obviously, and seeing what's out there. You know, it's almost the reverse course. How far are we from Earth in each episode of Enterprise? We had sort of two things we were talking about off mic. But, like, one thing, what I was talking about, I think, with The Expanse in Season 3, you know, sort of got stranger, you know, literally with The Expanse, because, like, the weird physics and everything and bendy things. But that, you know, that was really, really emphasizing the fact that we're going farther and farther from home into the unknown because we're going after this, you know, MacGuffin Zindi. or Horcrux, possibly, you know, depending on your point of view. And then I think what were you talking about, Darren? Where you were thinking about?
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, in early Enterprise, there's a couple of episodes where they're like, oh, we tried so hard to get out here that we weren't quite ready, and the, you know, like every alien they come across is just whipping them. And so they're like, oh, we just, you know, we need to go back to Earth. We need to go back and get some better gear. And they're disheartened because they're like, oh,
we're only a level 2 and we keep meeting level 5.
We got to go back and do the training mission, guys. Okay. It's just, it's not working. And yeah, they're all, you know, super bummed because, you know, they were on an amazing adventure and now it's not quite happening. But that, all that to say, you know, I remember that. So it's, again, it's not like they're far flung, but the fact that they, you know, they might have to go all the way back to Earth and lose all of their progress. You know, they missed that last checkpoint. So as they head back, you know.
Wait, so they didn't save?
That is the worst.
You know, yeah, that's, you know, they didn't save and they didn't press shift. They just didn't know what they were doing.
They were just walking around.
That's a warp 5. Might as well be crawling.
Exactly. Actually, I think there is actual episodes where they lose their high warp and all they can do is like warp 5. Or not warp 5, but like warp 2. And they're like, yeah, that's not going to cut it. It's not very fast.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, all that to say, I think that when, you know, that's what really is the crux of this topic. It's the times where we're, you know, our technology, which is so advanced by the 20 whatever century, but still, if your boat breaks, like, you're a long way from home and you're in trouble. And that can be really scary.
So who do we think is the most independent ship and crew? And who's the most dependent? Like, in other words, when you're far from home, I mean, then it's like you don't have Starfleet, you don't have resources, you don't have star bases anymore. Like, if you're really, you know, whether it's, you know, you're in System J25 or the Delta Quadrant or you're in the Gamma Quadrant and you're on your own, which do you think is the best? Whether it's, you know, Defiant or any Enterprises or Voyager, like, would you think we're the most better to be like, you know, we don't need Starfleet, we can figure things out? Or which ones do you think are the most that need the fleet support?
I would say that the 1701 is probably the best equipped for that kind of a thing. Like, Voyager would be right behind it, but that's only because it's a victim of circumstance. But the 1701 is literally designed to go out into deep space by itself without any support. So that's probably the one I would say is best prepared for that sort of a mission.
Yeah, I concur.
Yeah, because I don't know. I think the Defiant has a lot of power, though. I feel like...
Oh, come on now. Stop it. It can only fit like 6 cans of tuna on that thing, so...
But yeah, because I mean, I think that's always like when they're on their own or perceive that they're on their own. That's sort of like, obviously, that's a test, you know, test the metal of your characters, you know. And then because after, I don't know, I'm trying to think about this as I say it. After TOS and then before Enterprise, I'm doing that in real world chronology, obviously. Like, there's not necessarily homesickness in any of our series, right? Because everyone's there. I mean, to a certain extent, Deep Space Nine. Because as Bashir says, I'm on the edges of the frontier. And then Kira's like, you mean my home where I live? But, you know, it's everyone sort of has the creature comforts. I'm not just talking about replicators or everything, but that sense of community and familiarness. Whereas, you know, like TOS and Voyager, it's all strange. And Enterprise, too. You know, we're sort of strange and we don't know anything. There's no familiar. You can't contact your family or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Enterprise was also designed for that sort of thing, but they didn't know what to expect. I think that was the difference there.
I mean, they're still sending letters to third grade classes, but...
It's true. It is true. But they didn't even have... I was going to say...
Now, Daniel, we have a question from one of our listeners. They want to know, when you podcast, how does your bathroom work?
Daniel, do you go to the bathroom before every episode?
Daniel's I got the poop question?
Jeez. Of course I did. Of course I did.
But yeah, I almost don't think they really use that device that often. You know, you would think as many godlike, supernatural, whatever beings would be flinging, you know, Enterprises left and right. But other than Q once. And then, I'm trying to think, unfortunately, I'm all thinking of his TNG stuff, because I guess that's my bias showing, but When the Bow Breaks, if that's the name of that episode, and I don't know the name of the...
The Aldari. You know, wait, is that right?
Oh, Aldarians. Oh, yeah, I think that's... Well, Deep Throat from X-Files, that's how I remember. Basically flings the Enterprise away, you know, repulses them, and like, this is a small taste of the power that we have. Now give us all your children, wah, wah, wah.
Oh, yeah, that's the... I'm blanking.
Oh, it's basically when they steal the children.
Children
and
stealers.
They're
stealers.
It's like when kids are sleeping, what would you call that? It'll come to me. And so they steal the children and they try to negotiate. And then they're like, here, see our power. Boom. Okay, now we'll negotiate since you've seen... I forget how long it took the Enterprise to come back to the planet.
Like, but I know, I remember now. It's like they're like, if you piss us off again, we'll throw you so far that by the time you get back, you know, they're gonna be like grandkid, grandkid, grandkid.
And then suddenly commercial break.
Bop, bop, bop.
Good line. Do a commercial break. So what do you think would have been, is there any crew or a ship or a space station that you would have liked to see flung across the galaxy or a certain place?
Or a space station. Yeah. DS9 flung into the... Well, so, yeah, I mean, there was...
The Gamma Quadrant. It could have gone to the Gamma Quadrant. Well,
no, that would actually have been a really interesting idea if they had done that. If, like,
Well, there's the episode with Q where the graviton beam or whatever was pulling the ship into the wormhole, but they're like, but it's going to come out the other side in like a million pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But
I mean, you never played Space Station and Wormholes when you were a kid, Darren?
No, I didn't. How do you get the space station in the wormhole?
That would have been cool. I wish they had done that. I mean, like, the Jem'Hadar could have maybe like tractored it through and then cut them off from, you know, from support. That would have been interesting. That's actually a really good idea.
You know, they could have been one tiny station. You know, they could have shrunk the space station and sent it through the wormhole. You know, could have been 1/16th their size. Darren.
Yes, that's always makes the episode more fun. Shrink the people, shrink them good.
Oh, the Shrinky Dink episode. That would have been good, because then you could have had them at home. You could have put the little Deep Space Nine in your oven, and then you open it up, and it's a nice...
Just add water.
Dink.
Well, you wouldn't need to use, like, landing pad C. You could just open up the airlock, and they just fly in.
Okay, guys, it's been fun talking about the great journeys of our crews being flung across long journeys. But, Darren, what are we talking about next week?
Well, next week, we are going to be talking about the wonders of space exploration. Now, we saw a lot of this in Enterprise, but there were a lot of instances in Star Trek where our characters kind of just took a step back and were like, this is incredible what we're doing. The fact of being in the 24th century was not lost on them, and they were... just basking in the achievement of man. So we're going to be talking about just wonders of space exploration, even in the 24th century.
Awesome. And if our listeners want to talk to us about their favorite journeys of our Trek crews, they can send a communique to our base here on SETI Alpha 3 at thenerdparty.com/contact, or even better yet, they can leave an iTunes review and a rating, we've had a few come in, and so we certainly appreciate feedback that way about what you like. But Daniel, if people want to talk to you about the hot spots to visit in the Delta Quadrant, where can people contact you?
I know them all, so they should definitely contact me on Twitter @WhatUpDan. That's the number one, not the word, and that's the number one as in the number one vacation spot.
And Darren, if people want to talk to you about places to avoid in the Delta Quadrant, where can they contact you?
Well, man, I'm starting a quadruple A book because, you know, it's really far away. So we have to add the...
space is three dimensionals.
It's the Astronomy Association of the former American States. But anyway, but they can find me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi, or they can visit my website, drscifi.com, where I talk about my occupation of Earth as a 504 stormtrooper. Or if they wanted to hear a little bit of my voice and a little bit of an adorable voice, they can listen to my other podcast, which is called Goodnight Moon, which is short 10-minute episodes where I talk with my 4-year-old daughter about space exploration. And it's fairly adorable, just to put it out there.
I think your voice is adorable, Darren.
Well, of the two of us, I would say hers is the more adorable.
And if folks want to talk about the hidden mysteries of the Beta Quadrant, we don't even talk about it. They can contact me on Twitter, where my handle is NCPublicServant.
On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles this holiday season, Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month there's a different theme and new exclusive items you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or loved one. They're always watching. They've designed a system to keep you down. They're meddlesome. Hello, friends. This time for a revolution. Fight the power and pave the way for a brighter tomorrow with December's Rebellious Crate, featuring exclusive items from Assassin's Creed, Mr. Robot, Firefly, and more, including an exclusive Funko Pop, our monthly t-shirt, and pin. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive this month's crate when that cutoff happens. After that, it's over. Make sure to head to lootcrate.com/nerdparty and enter code nerdparty to save even more on a new subscription today.
So we'll see you all next week because, of course, we're stuck here and we can't journey home.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Daniel Prue.
I'm Philip Gilfus, stranded here on City Alpha 3.